live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Tutor Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And this is a perfect interview to have on Martin Luther King Day. Looking at specifically enough, especially as an educator, understanding the man and understanding specifically the message and looking in education that we can teach anyone. It doesn't matter who they are. We shouldn't look at their the color of their skin or their or anything that's different about them. They all can learn. And so I thought, well, who would be the best person to call but the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King? I'd like to welcome the program Dr. Alveda King. She is the director of African American Outreach for Priests for Life, former Georgia House of Representatives, author, professor. Dr. Alveda, thanks for calling. How are you?
Well, Neil, it's just great to speak with you. And as you were talking, I was reminded again of my dad, Reverend A.G. King, the brother of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Uncle M.L. And just thinking about everything that you were saying, my Uncle M.L. once said, everyone can be great because everyone can serve. So people will take one of his quotes that we need to be judged by the content of our character, not the color of our skin. But then we forget about the love of God, the service, the serving one another. And I put it this way. Sure, we do want to judge people by the content of their character, not the money in their pocketbook, the color of their skin, where they live, how old they are they sick, are they well, none of that. But the content of their character. And if the character needs a little help, we do that with love and help build the character up a little bit, you know? So all of that kind of goes together.
Well, I definitely think so. And I think we make a mistake in our country as we specifically, I used to teach in an inner city Catholic school, part of the Extra Mile Foundation in Pittsburgh. And a lot of our teachers, they looked at and said, well, because these kids are poor, they can't learn. These kids are African American, they can't learn. Or, you know, or and basically they come from families of single family homes, they can't learn. And that's why they're not learning. So it's not my job as a teacher. It's impossible. Well, when I went in that classroom, I looked at them in the same way as if I was teaching in an affluent school and had great success because of that, Dr. Alveda. And I think that's the key component, that all kids can learn. All, everyone, we have to treat them in a way specifically. And we put labels on people and different things. All it does is not have them reach their highest potential.
Well, I appreciate that, and it is so true. Uncle Lamel, we must learn to live together as brothers, and I added sisters, a parish is full. And so if we treat each other with that human regard and human dignity, you can carry that over to what's going on in our country and in the world today. Of course, we had that big terroristic shock over for Paris and Trayvon Martin down in Sanford, Florida, Ferguson with Michael Brown, Eric up in Staten Island, and all of that. But then I think about my own work at Priest for Life, you know, director of African American Outreach with Priest for Life, and we are working on a project healing the shock waves of abortion with Silent No More awareness campaign. So if we're not going to value life from conception until natural death, love people from the womb to the tomb, and so then we get in these big arguments and big fights with, say, human sexuality, for an example, and let's not allow gay marriage and all of that. Well, we need to hold up. Certainly, we know what the Bible says, but the Bible also says love you one another. So if somebody is having some issues, then we need to show so much love and so much Christ if we're Christians. If you're Judeo-Christian, however, whatever that persuasion is, that people will want to stop and listen and say, is there something I'm missing here? Is there a better life for me? But if we're not showing people the beauty of God and the beauty of life, then we keep having all of these wars and rumors of wars.
No, most definitely. If we don't show love to our neighbor, we don't show that specifically we care about each individual person. Just because we have different beliefs, Dr. Alveda, does not mean we can't love that person. If we in the Bible say, you know, we're supposed to love these people, and we have other people out there, you know, preaching hatred and stuff. The bottom line in all this is love. And you're right, in the Gospels, Jesus loved everyone. It didn't matter if they were a sinner. And I think that that's the biggest mistake we're making. Now, looking at education, specifically our education system today, Dr. Alveda, and I know that you do definitely take a look at that as an important part of, especially being a former professor and Georgia House of Representatives and all the different things, and author. What do you think is our mistake in education today? You know, that's becoming a very divisive thing as well, as I cover every week on my show.
In 1963, you know, I was a college professor for 19 years myself, and people were like, I taught at an inner-city community college, and, oh, they can't really learn, they'll never be anything, why are you wasting your time? But I, you know, and the same thing that you said, I had a student, and she was on welfare and everything, African-American woman, and she was in the class kind of moaning and crying and complaining and giving me reasons why. Well, when we look at these reasons with the educational system and everything, I had this student and she was crying and moaning and upset. I was teaching in an inner city community college and she was trying to explain to me why life was so hard and why she could do her work. And I looked at her and said, oh, you need to stop crying. Shut up. Just shut up. Stop crying. God has something he wants you to do.
Yes.
So she went ahead. She said, did you just tell me to shut up? Can you do that? I said, I sure can. And so several years later, I had left my position as a college professor. I was doing some other work, and I was at a Martin Luther King event, and this very well-dressed, polished, well-spoken woman came up to me there, and she said, you really don't know me, do you? I said, well, didn't they just introduce you? Aren't you the mayor of Riverdale? Yes, but I was in your classroom one day, and you told me to shut up and stop crying. And so this woman had become a mayor. But what happened to schools? I was trying to answer your question. But anybody can learn.
Yes.
And that was the point that you made. But in 1963, prayer was taken out of the public square, out of school. And then 73, we legalized the murder of our weakness, the babies in the womb. And so now we wonder why the children are floundering in the education system. Many cannot read. Are not learning, feel that there is no hope. We need to bring back In God We Trust and One Nation Under God back to our schoolrooms. That should not be something that is forbidden to say. But the real reason that our education system is failing, society is weak. The family has been weakened. The church, I hate to say it, has been weakened. I'm not saying God has been weakened.
Right.
You cannot weaken God. But the church has been weakened. The economy has been weakened by greed and entitlement. So when we allow God back in revival, and we are in a revival, it looks strange. The reason we don't see it, we don't see the tent meeting. We don't see all the church meetings on TV. But when we see people helping each other, when we see people saying, wait a minute, you're a human being, let me stop. Tell me your name again. Those kinds of things are happening. And as we do that, and as you are bold enough to let me get on your radio program and say these kinds of things out into the atmosphere, we know that there is change, not change. Change is one level. Transformation of the human heart is in the air.
Absolutely. And last thing, a message from your uncle that you want children to know about that's so important for them to move forward, especially celebrating today. In a way that does not lead to this divisiveness that's going on right now in our country.
Let me recommend my book, King Rules, and there is a King Rules for Children by Dr. Alveda King. And in the King Rules book by Thomas Nelson, the very last chapter is if Uncle ML could tweet. And so one of the tweets would be, we must learn to live together as brothers. And I add as sisters, or perish as fools. So we are brothers and sisters. We must love each other. And let's use our words to heal rather than using our words and our weapons to kill.
Oh, wow. Okay, so where's the best place we can find you? I know you're in social media. I connected you via Facebook, but you're also on Twitter and all those places. Where can we go and find information on you, Dr. Alveda? I know we can purchase your book anywhere, but also where's the best place to find you?
Well, my handle is Alveda King. Find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Somebody just asked me, how many websites do you have? I said, as many as I can get. I'm trying to get out into cyberspace. I'm old, but I can still tweet.
Well, you're somebody I definitely want to bring on if we have some more education, especially put the education piece in certain events. And I'll definitely reach out to you for sure, Dr. Alveda. And again, you can purchase your book on Amazon and all different places and check you out in all those different places. Best of luck. And I know that you are truly trying to make change. And ultimately, you do not want to look at the color of the skin. We all are brothers and sisters in Christ, and we need to have that message. Yeah. So thanks again for calling.
Thank you so much. God bless.
God bless. Take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Author's Corner, Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor. Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And you know what? The interviews just keep on going and going. The big names coming up in the next couple weeks really is exciting after having that time where I lost my voice right before the holidays and to come back with such interesting people. So one of the shows I really love watching is The Amazing Race. And I do because it's so heart-wrenching. And you never know, are they going to get there? And all the cool places they get to travel. So I'm excited to welcome the program Allie Forsyth and Kim Perfetto from Season 20. 25 of The Amazing Race. Hi, guys. How are you? And thanks for calling.
Hi.
All right. Well, fantastic. So we'll go right into the specifics. I like hearing the backstory, how you guys got on the show, because reality television is such an interesting situation. I've interviewed Real Housewives, different people, and always that process of getting cast on those shows, it's weird. So, Allie, tell us specifically how this worked out, how you guys ended up on the show. Tell us the story.
I'm going to let Kim tell this one
okay.
because it's her that we were on the show.
Okay.
My brother was applying for Survivor, and it's the same casting director that does both shows. And she was talking to my brother and I about the blood versus water, you know, going on as siblings. And this is so funny. It's how casting goes. I guess somewhere in the process of that, they decided, wait a minute, Kim is a cyclist in New York City. She's a former bike messenger. We've been looking for a type like that. You know, she's like fit and fierce and badass. And so they called me back and they're like, actually, we're looking for this for Amazing Race. And do you have someone else you can race with like you? And Allie came to mind. And I was like, yeah, I have this friend, Allie. And then next thing you know, they're switching shows and switching partners. And my poor brother got lost in the dust.
Oh my. And that's what happens in these types of casting calls. I almost ended up on Fox News for an education topic, and basically they pulled the plug on me with like a minute to go before I was going on live. So you know how these things work with producers and specific things like that. So Allie, that's quite interesting, Kim telling you the story and then you get involved in this. So tell us about being a cyclist and how this really helped you in the process of being able to compete in this in the Amazing Race.
Well, I think the biggest thing for both of us is that in the race, you can't really, you anticipate as best you can, but you can't really predict what's going to happen. So, I mean, racing and riding bikes and things like that, you just have to be on your toes. And I think that's what helps the most. Helped us the most with Amazing Race, especially navigating, living in a city like New York and trying to get around as fast as you can, kind of runs parallel with how the races run.
Yeah, definitely, in so many ways. And you're looking at yourself and you're saying to yourself, where are they taking us next? And from watching it as a fan, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going from here. Now they're expecting them to do this. And then you never know, Kim, who's going to win the next task. It's really a lot of a luck of the draw in certain aspects and different things. And it really just doesn't involve all physical. It involves mental. And it also involves, I guess, psychological in so many ways. Right? Wouldn't you agree, Kim?
Yeah, physical endurance, mental endurance, skills. I mean, there's all different types of skills. They've had contestants cooking, sewing, building, solving puzzles, as well as like lifting heavy things, running, very physical tasks too. So a lot of people who maybe don't watch the show that often, when they hear The Amazing Race, they assume it's more physical. But if you watch it as a fan, you know that like it it really challenges all aspects of you as a, you know, as a competitor. That's the reason why, you know, we have the winners we had for this season. I mean, a lot of people were shocked and amazed, but two, you know, young scientists, the grad students, you know, food scientists, they weren't athletic necessarily. So it's very much anyone's race.
Now, so Ali, any experience being on television before this happened to you? Being on the Amazing Race?
On a show like the Amazing Race?
Or any type of reality or anything TV, any type of media before that?
I did not, but Kim did.
Okay, so did you get some advice from Kim on how to try to watch out for how, I guess, how things are produced in these reality shows?
Well, Kim is kind of like a big sister to me. She's always telling me, you know, be prepared for this or watch out for that. Or she's always kind of telling me what to do every once in a while. And so in this situation, she was like, now, Ali, you know, like it started with casting. She was like, don't get your hopes up. I know we're going to LA for casting, but, you know, anything could happen. And then, you know, we get cast and then she's like, you got to be prepared for anything. You know, it may not be how it's portrayed, or, you know, she would tell me sometimes, she's like, watch your mouth. I think there was an outtake on YouTube at one point of her slapping me because I said something that I probably shouldn't have said. She gave me some decent advice, closer to a big sister, I guess you could call it.
Right. And that's the kind of thing, because you never, what you say in the worst situation will end up on television, and you could literally change your life in seconds with that 15 minutes of fame in that situation. So Kim, what types of experience did you have doing media before this?
I did an episode of Made, MTV's Made. And then I've also been on a couple of movies and TV shows, but that was for acting. I mean, for reality, I'm trying to think what else I've done. I mean, I've done live TV. I did Good Morning America and The Today Show. So live, just being on live TV, but mainly the Made episode. That was a month and a half. It was actually longer shooting time than The Amazing Race. So that was a test of patience for sure. And to be careful, you know, always be aware. The camera's always on. And, you know, be aware of how you want to read you and not to be misunderstood, you know. Like, you can't just be flippant with your words because, you know, editors can use any of that to make you seem like you meant something you didn't.
Well, I know that, and I would hate for them to go back my 5 years in radio since I started doing this, or even the days when I was a professional wrestler, and come back and find something on me, and then they have dirt on me if I ever ran as a politician or some type of situation, then I guess, or somehow make it to the big time, and like, you know, and then the paparazzi have something on you or whatever. It is what it is in so many ways, Kim. And you said the Maids episode, I'm sure that really prepared you for this. I think. I mean, I can imagine, especially, I guess, all eyes are on you and Made, and then you come to this event where a lot of other people really aren't used to the television thing, so you know kind of how to do it, and in acting, that can really help portray you in the way you wanted to be portrayed during on the show, right?
Yeah. Wait, did you say you were a professional wrestler?
Yes, I was a professional wrestler. You guys got to friend me on Facebook, and then you'll see a picture of me before my days. Now I'm not. I'm 42 now, and I retired in my 30s and went on to become a teacher and own a tutoring consulting company. But I always miss the days of pro wrestling for sure.
You know, we're cheering on our competitors.
Who was I? See, I didn't get to watch the seasons, right? So tell us, update me, please.
You know, we raced with two pro wrestlers.
Who were they?
Brooke Adams and Robbie E.
Okay. Were they minor league pro wrestlers, those two guys?
They're on TNA.
Oh, TNA. Okay. Yeah. I'm friends with Rhino. I worked in the days when The Rock was not even The Rock. I was on shows with him in Memphis, Tennessee. So that's me dating things back to look at Rock now. My gosh. So I have rubbed my elbows with greatness. The days of wrestling Jerry the King Lawler and all that. So that's where I get some of the entertainment bug for sure that I could never give it away. But, you know, those guys, they beat their bodies up for sure in so many ways. Now, Allie, any surprises from The Amazing Race? What surprises would you say happened once you got involved in this that you just didn't expect happening?
Like, I want a car.
What'd you say, Allie?
I said, I want a car.
Oh, you want a car. So tell us the story about that. Yeah.
Well, I went on The Amazing Race after $1 million, but I never thought I'd win a car. So that was a big surprise and a good one.
And I gave my car to my brother, so he didn't get out with nothing to show for it.
So what? How did you win the car? Was that part of a challenge, or tell us about that, Kim?
So this is Allie. Each leg of the race is you win. Whoever comes in first place wins a prize at the pit stop. And in leg 4 in Copenhagen, Kim and I made it first to the airport. We were first on the earliest flight. And luckily, that leg was just tailored to us. There was a cycling challenge, and there was a memorization challenge, which I don't know if you could say that was tailored to us, because Kim had to wait tables, kind of, and that's not her forte. But anyways, we got to ride a bike. We were ahead of the pack all day. We came in first, and surprise, when we got to the pit stop, the prize were 2 brand-new Ford C-Max hybrids.
Oh, wow. So that must have been amazing. And so that was your surprise, Allie. What about yours, Kim? What were you surprised based on the show that you didn't expect to happen?
Let's see. I'm trying to think. I mean, we studied the show a lot. We were pretty prepared. Surprise. Okay, one of our surprise challenges for us, I mean, I knew I was going to have to do things that were going to test my fears and various. I definitely had to test my fear of heights. But there was a point in the Shetland Islands where we were driving, and I was the designated. I was supposed to be the driver. Like, I'm the driver, Allie's the navigator. And they just threw a wrench into it, and they're like, for some reason, it was some insurance something. I don't know what happened. They told us suddenly that I wasn't allowed to drive anymore, and then Allie had to do the rest of the driving. So we got stuck a couple times that day because we were driving manual transmission on some hills and some muddy terrain, and I was the one who was supposed to be doing all that. And so poor Allie, I'm like coaching Allie to like drive up these muddy hills in a manual transmission vehicle. It was stressful.
Well, here's the funny thing is that I'm not the best manual transmission vehicle driver, but I taught Kim how to drive.
Now, Allie, what would you say was the worst part of it? Because, again, we all know some of these physical challenges or mental challenges or whatever happens during The Amazing Race, there's times that really are stressful. What was a stressful time during The Amazing Race, would you say?
Well, I'd say right along with having to drive the car, keeping up with the passport. I think I checked on them like a newborn.
Okay. That's pretty interesting. What about you, Kim?
The most stressful time was definitely the fast forward, because the way we got out of the race wasn't a typical, you know, we were last ones to come in. I mean, what happened was they have to fast forward every season. There's one option, and it's basically like a gamble. It's like, if you do this challenge, you get to skip all the other challenges and go straight to the front. Straight to the first, first one to win that day. And so Allie and I were ahead for quite a while at that point, and we decided to take the gamble. It was a very nail-biting moment for us to make that decision. We went back and forth about it, but I'm very much like, once the decision is made, you lose time going back, you know, being indecisive. So we stuck to it, but you don't know what the challenge is until you get there. So once we got there, and to find out that the challenge was surfing, and you had interviewed Bethany Hamilton previously, so you know she was on the show with us.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
And so for us to know that our make-or-break moment with the show was a surfing challenge was kind of like the most stressful moment of the show.
I could imagine that. And for the places, Allie, you guys traveled during the Amazing Race, what tell us specifically for our listeners that did not get to watch the show. But what's so great is you can go back and DVR a lot of it, and that's the cool thing. I love, or not DVR, there's so many opportunities to go back and watch the show again. Allie, what would you say were what places did you travel to during the race?
What was the question one more time?
The areas you traveled to during the race, the Amazing Race. Where was it located? Different things like that for our listeners.
The places that we went to Morocco, we went to St. Thomas, Virgin Islands, we went to London, England, we went to Shetland Islands, and Singapore, and where else did we go? Copenhagen.
It was a blur, wasn't it, Allie?
Malta. Oh, yeah, we went to Malta, too. We spent 2 days in Morocco, so we got to see the town square, and then we also, like, the rural areas around it, which was neat as well.
Now, Kim, was that a blur, all traveling to all those countries?
No, we have it all remembered. We just, like, take it out. We were trying to list them all up. We get confused sometimes, but... and it's been a while. You know, we did it in June. We shot the show in June. So it's been like 6 months now since we traveled there. So, but we have these recaps of behind the scenes of everything that we did along the way as we were watching the show. We put all these recaps on my YouTube channel. So Allie and I sat down and did like a whole talk back after every episode was aired. That's another source for any fans that want to, like, get more behind-the-scenes information or, like, more of a look into what our life was like during the race, on the race. It's on the YouTube channel, Kim Nonstop.
Now, also Kim, what place did you guys finish in the race?
We were the last team to be eliminated right before the final.
Oh.
We fifth place overall because they took four teams to the final. Yeah, it was pretty crushing. We hate reliving that moment, but
it's been harder to watch.
Yeah, it was hard to watch.
Well, I can understand. It's like, I cannot believe this. You were wanting that $1 million and you thought, hey, we're able to, we've handled so many different challenges. We're going to be able to do this. And, there you go. And then you get eliminated. Now, who were the final four teams? I'm going to test one of you to tell me who were the final four teams were.
We'll never forget it. The final four teams are the food scientists, the wrestlers, the surfers, and the dentists.
Oh my gosh! And so the big thing was the surprise was the scientists winning, wouldn't you? As you were saying, Kim, that was a surprise.
It was a huge surprise for everybody watching, and for us even, because we're waiting at the finish line, waiting for the teams to come in. And when we saw them finish first, I mean, everybody's jaw dropped because truly, this team had, like, held on by a thread the whole time. They say it themselves. They admit it. I mean, we're friends with everybody after the race, and we were with Maya and Amy during the screening of the final episode. And they themselves were like, we still can't believe it. Like, we got lost all the time. We were always behind, you know? And it's just, it truly is everyone's game. Like, what it boiled down to was the last challenge. And Amy crushed the last challenge. It was more of a memory challenge than like a physical challenge. And she just came out on top. And that was the make or break moment for them.
It definitely sounds like the make or break moment. So tell us specifically what's going on, Allie, after the show. Has life changed for you? Being recognized, just different things. It's been a whirlwind, hasn't it, after the show?
Yeah, it's been a total whirlwind. It was really awesome to see everything unfold because, you know, you take off on a month and travel around the world, and then your lips are sealed until it airs. And so the entire fall was spent, you know, watching episodes with friends and families and fans. And Kim and I both work for SoulCycle. And so having, like, some show fans come to our classes there, being in New York and Los Angeles, it's been really awesome. And it's fun to talk about, too, because it was such a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
So you guys work in Los Angeles too at SoulCycle, both of you, or New York?
We worked in New York. We both lived in New York when we were cast. I still fly between New York, LA for SoulCycle.
and Allie just started working in SoulCycle.
So do you guys know? Do you guys know Angela Davis?
Yeah, we know Angela Davis.
Yeah, I'm good friends with Jerome. So yeah, Jerome and I hung out in LA together with GJ Reynolds and all this different stuff when I went out to LA for an event for something that Jerome was doing, and I met Angela and her sister. They're all fantastic.
Awesome. They're the cutest family ever.
They really are. Whenever you run into LA, tell Angela I said hello, because again, I've kind of lost contact with GJ and Jerome and stuff like that. I'll have to tag Jerome when I say I interviewed you guys for sure.
Yeah.
So small world in so many ways. So what are you got? So Ali said you're again doing SoulCycle as well as Kim. Kim, what are you currently promoting? You're promoting The Amazing Race from the checkout, your YouTube, and all these different things. Do you have any other projects coming up?
Actually, Ali and I are just developing a web series. We're going to premiere it on YouTube. Well, we have plans to premiere it on YouTube first, but I guess pending funding from anyone else, it might go elsewhere. But that's kind of the project that's being worked on right now around pilot season. We've got our own little mini adventure series. And then my YouTube channel that I always post to every week. I have, you know, my own subscribers and followers there. And I'm always promoting that because that's kind of where I help people get healthy and fit and realize their dreams. That's the goal of that channel.
Well, that's fantastic. And what you guys are doing over at SoulCycle is amazing. I heard about Angela's class and some of the people that ended up in her class when my friend GJ Reynolds took a SoulCycle class. And you never know who shows up, especially in the LA classes. They're pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
The who's who of celebrities show up, and it's quite interesting. So best place to find both of you. Do you both have social media as well, Ali? Do you have your own stuff? And so I'll ask Ali first. Do you have your own Twitter and different things and Facebook fan page and stuff? Or is it together? Yeah. So tell us.
We have our own, and then we have one together as well. You can find me at Ali Forsyth just about on every social platform. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and on Snapchat, Ali, and it's the number 4 site.
Okay, and how about you, Kim?
I'm Kim Nonstop, and that's Kim with a Y, and Ali's with an I. So don't confuse that. Everyone confuses all the time. Kim Nonstop, Kim with a Y, and that's KimNonstop.com, YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter.
Wow, you guys are everywhere. That's great. And I'm so glad to have the chance to talk to you and chat with you guys and learn about The Amazing Race. Best of luck with all the different ventures you guys are doing. And I know I could just see, Kim, your ideas saying now with this awesome opportunity with Amazing Race and also Made, I'm going to continue my acting career and move forward. And it sounds like you guys are both doing that in so many ways.
Oh, yeah.
And what a place to do, go back and forth from New York to LA. You guys are living the dream. So good talking to both of you, and best of luck.
Thank you.
All right, take care. All right, see you later. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, Neil Haley. And let's continue with some awesome celebrity interviews. And I was researching this actress, and it's very, very interesting. Back in the day, some of the things she played as a child actor, especially when we're talking about the one Santa Claus and different things she was involved in. She's done a lot of different projects. She's a singer. She's an actress, and she has a very big film coming up really soon. So I want to welcome the program Elizabeth Small, also a.k.a. Lizzie Small. Elizabeth,
yes.
Thanks for calling the program, and how are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm wonderful, you know. College life.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I'm sure that's a question I'll definitely ask in the story, is because, I mean, you see your social media booming, you have your personal, and you also have the you know, the Twitter, the Facebook fan page, all these different things, and this big movie coming up. This got, it's kind of, I guess, walking around this campus. Once everything goes through, they'll say, who are you? But I guess being in California, they're used to situations like that, right? Where you're developing your celebrity-dom and you're on campus going to school like everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. And it's really nice because everyone at my school is really supportive of my career. And all my friends are just so excited for me and really positive about everything. So I really couldn't ask for more from the people around me.
So let's kind of break it down. All your life, did you want to be an entertainer? You wanted to be a singer, actress,
yeah,
all that.
That's, so basically, Continue.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah. So basically, just from the age of about five, I was, you know, putting on shows in my living room, whether it was for my family or my friends, and dancing all over the house. And so I started dance classes and singing lessons and all sorts of things. And there was actually this audition at my dance studio that I was taking classes at. And it was an audition for a reality TV show pilot for VH1. And I, you know, begged my mom to be able to audition. So she let me go. And, you know, it was kind of just something I was doing on a whim. I had no idea what any of this stuff was all about. And I ended up booking the part, and we filmed this VH1 pilot. And, you know, following that, I just told my mom, I have to get an agent. I want to do this. I want to perform. I want to act. And so, you know, she totally was on board, and she introduced me to actually someone that she was close friends with who had a relation to casting agents, and set me up a meeting, and, you know, kind of just all fell into place from there. So I really just love performing from, you know, a very young age, and it's been what I feel like I'm meant to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting. We'll go right into it. And it's interesting when you're doing these interviews, you probably get these quick 3 minutes. So having an in-depth one that's not like from a magazine, it's a different story. So I want to jump back.
Yeah.
I want to jump back specifically. And that's what I try to do on my show, is really give the backstory to everybody.
Okay.
We can talk about projects, yeah, different things, but I'm interested in this, especially for my education network, in a way to think about child actresses and how they go through specific things. So you audition for this VH1 project.
Yes.
What happened from that?
So what it was they were remaking the Oh Nikki, You're So Fine music video, you know, from the 80s, and they were recasting the entire music video, so to say, with kids. So I was cast as one of the cheerleader dancers in it, and, you know, they covered an entire week of us rehearsing in a studio to, you know, all the drama that goes with you know, working with young kids who, you know, at the end of the day, they're tired and they want to go home and hang out with their friends. And so we basically remade this music video, and they made this remaking of it into an episode on VH1. And what happened is they aired it, and yeah, that's basically what happened.
So that's kind of where it started, was a mixture of acting and singing at that point.
Exactly.
Before, you were just doing it like any young girl would be doing, you know, dance, theater, but never knowing what was going to come of this. Then I guess your big break was the VH1 deal. And then from there, you're like, okay, now I have to really start focusing on both careers, right? Once that response,
I think the VH1 pilot for me that I did, that is what really introduced me into the entire set life and cameras and, you know, 1, 2, 3 action. Because before, I was doing a lot of live performing, and I was, you know, performing on stage. And so I had that whole experience, but I had never had any experience behind a camera. And so I think that's really what introduced me to that. And that's what made me fall in love with being on set and made me realize all the challenges that go with being on set. But that was kind of the segue from, you know, live performing into actually behind the camera.
And that's what's going to be interesting to learn about in your career, as we're kind of breaking down specifically from that you're not just the person that wants to be on stage. You have the ability, especially going to college now as well, and I'll find out what your major is in a second or two, that you basically see both sides of this business. You're not just seeing the performance side. You're seeing the side behind the camera and learning from VH1 and learning how reality television is made at that age. How old were you when this whole VH1 deal was going?
I think I was about 8 years old. And for me, it was fascinating to watch. It was crazy. And I don't know if I fully understood it because I was only 7 or 8 years old, but I was, you know, very much wowed by it. And I wanted to learn more.
So how did your parents, think about this when you begged and this happened? Did your family think, hey, you're going to be this kind of, did you grow up in a family of people in the entertainment field? How do they feel about now? Okay, now it's time for casting calls and everything from this experience of VH1.
Yeah, so it was really new for my family because I'm the youngest of 3 older sisters. So none of my sisters did any of this sort of thing. I mean, one of them was a singer, and she loved to sing, but she never did it per se professionally. So, you know, for me to want to do this, it was new for my parents. And I think I'm really lucky because my parents are very open to us, me and my all my three sisters, really, you know, pursuing what we love. And they really support us if we have a serious plan of action. So for me, I mean, I was very young, but I think my parents realized that it was serious for me. And this wasn't just something that I was like, oh, I just want to, like, be a singer. You know, I really did want to perform, and I really was like, this is what I feel like I should be doing with my life. And so, you know, they supported me. My, you know, my dad, he kind of tried to stay a little bit uninvolved, a little on the outside. He's very supportive, but he's not really, like, you know, in the day-to-day stuff. And my mom and I are, we are always communicating about it. We handle the day-to-day, you know, auditions and meetings and interviews and this and that. And my mom has become very involved, although she is not my manager.
You know what's interesting when you're talking about 8 years old, that some eight-year-olds, especially if you're the youngest in a family, either you're going to be babied or you're going to really learn to mature quickly just because
exactly.
of how chaotic. I have five kids of my own, and I already see one of my,
wow.
my youngest girl, how she is more mature in certain ways and able to do so many more things at her age mm-hmm. at four than my oldest daughter, who's nine, who literally just is just still needs so much help, self-help type skills. She's very
yeah.
intelligent. So you see these different relationships based on what when you were born and the type
yeah,
of environment
sure.
you grew up. So when you're saying at eight you knew what you wanted to do, I'm sure your mom's like, okay, she's focused. I've seen it through my other daughters and that what they've gone on in their lives, but this is an interesting thing, and I think she has talent from this VH1 thing, so we got to roll. So from there, you started to act, and you also started to do some singing. What would you say if you kind of were rank, like, bigger parts you had in acting through those child years? What would you say were parts that people would recognize and think about throughout after this VH1 deal?
Well, really what was a huge thing for me as a kid was I got cast in a TV series called Hip Hop Perry on TLC and Discovery Kids. So I was a series regular on that show for, you know, 2 years they aired it. And we filmed for months, and I was only in fourth grade. So it was a really, really big experience. You know, I missed 3 months of school. I was on a set every single day, going from rehearsals to filming over and over and over. And it was definitely a challenge. I was young and I had so much fun, and I had no idea what I was really getting myself into, but it was such a great learning experience. I was working on a, you know, active daily set, and it was really, really cool. So that would say it's probably the biggest thing that I did when I was younger.
What year was that, by the way, Lizzie, the show that you were on?
Oh.
Yeah.
I'd have to look that up. Maybe.
You'll think your age, but I'm catching you on. Is this before Reality Craze happened, or especially TLC, before it made its huge run, or is it about to pop at that point? You know how TLC with, I think that John
yeah.
and Kate Plus Eight really brought.
Yeah, no, it was prior
yeah.
to that.
Yes.
It was prior, and because it was a kids' TV show, it was kind of like a Barney sort of thing, but a new version remade. So Hip Hop Harry was in, I'm trying to think because it went on for years, 2006, 2007, 2008.
Okay. So from that process, you're doing that, and it looks like it's a mixture again of acting and singing.
And dancing.
All the different areas that you have your talent in. But as I looked at your roles, you have so many, your bio has so many different opportunities of smaller roles in movies and stuff like that, and in television. So basically, you're one of those child actors that were after that opportunity, was it easy to get work, would you say, after that?
You know, I would say, of course, when you do a project where you gain a lot of experience, that only can help you. You know, acting is a crazy business, and the industry is insane. So does it ever get easier? I don't know. Maybe it does. But it's definitely, you have to be passionate about it, because things aren't going to just walk into your life, you know, left and right. Of course, you're going to gain some amazing opportunities just by chance. But it really, I think, is something you have to consistently work out every day and try to gain opportunities in every possible facet that you can.
So you had pretty much a lot of smaller roles after that opportunity with TLC and stuff, correct? leading up to college and high school and all those things. Yeah. And and then through that process, you have, I think your bug probably, as I look in your social media, is definitely your singing. That you're definitely, would you say that's your number one thing, is your singing and your performance?
No, I would not. Because honestly, for me, singing and acting are both equal in different ways.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, singing for me is more personal. It really is truly just me writing lyrics, and everything comes from my own personal life and experience. And so that's my time to just be me and be really open. Whereas for me, acting is trying on new roles and really not being myself and stepping out of my comfort zone and experiencing things I wouldn't normally. So I would say that's the biggest difference, but neither of them I would say is one over the other. They're just different.
So, Elizabeth, growing up in that process of being a child actress and being involved in this stuff, and they look at you when you're younger, how have you been able to stay afloat in those ways? A lot of people that are child actors, we know stories, when they grow up and get into the teen years and then also into the college years, they completely grow out of this business. How have you not done that? I mean, you've had smaller roles in a lot of different things throughout that time period to now, where your big, big deal's coming up. But what would you say have kept you going so that you keep fresh, you know?
Yeah, well, especially for me, it's been a huge challenge because I have been going to normal school my entire life, and not just going to normal school, but taking, you know, AP courses and honors courses and really trying to push myself in that area too. So, you know, acting and singing have always been number one, but I always have tried to keep a balance with school and a balance with having, you know, a normal life and normal friends and going to prom and being a part of the school magazine. So I think for me, staying in school has been a really, really huge part of keeping me who I am and helping me realize, you know, where there is a balance and where there needs to be a balance. So school is just a huge, huge part of my life, and I love it. So I think that, and as well as, you know, having amazing friends, having amazing family, and also I have been passionate about this whole business from, you know, from when I started. So unless you really are passionate about it, and unless you really want to make sacrifices and work every day for something that, you know, is a very risky and obviously a chance career, it's not going to happen, you know?
Right,
so
exactly.
I would say, yeah, and you're going to burn yourself out, you know? I've seen many people who are very talented, but they just lose passion for it, and, you know, they try to keep continuing, and it just, something about it doesn't work. The dynamic is just not there, and I really think that being passionate, but also remembering that there is more to life than just acting. There is more to life than just your career and just singing. You know, I am still 18 years old, and I have a lot to experience in my life and having friends and doing quote-unquote normal things that, you know, normal 18-year-olds do is perfectly fine and perfectly healthy for me. So I think really maintaining that balance has really been key and really has what's kept me in check.
And I think also that I've talked to a lot of working actors and actresses. The bottom line is, if you're going to work a lot, you know, you might get your big role, which happens so many times. They get this big, you know, TV show that really they were unknown till that happened. If you're able to work with everyone, you are very laid back.
Oh, you're
and it helps that you have your intelligence, meaning you took AP courses and all these different things, and you're in college now. You're not like some of them that you have this casting call and they literally have no substance and are very naive to the business, and yet also are very immature and disrespectful. They're going to want to work with people that are willing to work. So I could see you as in modeling as well, because I talked to some models and then they say the same deal. If you are we got jobs compared to people that are a lot better looking than us, meaning like top notch, because they weren't easy to work with. Then and it's like there's a specific thing. So if you can work with the team, you have a much better success. So let's So let's kind of jump, Elizabeth, into specifically because we're gonna get right into the movie now. Now, is this a huge break for you? I mean, tell us the story of how you're starring in this film with opposite people like George Lopez, Marissa Tomei, and Jamie Lee Curtis. This the movie again, Spare Parts. This has got to be huge for you. I mean, is this a really big opportunity for you to get to be in this film?
Yeah, it was very exciting. You know, I went through about 6 auditions for the film. I originally auditioned for a different role, so it was a long process and very, very worthwhile and honestly a great experience, the entire thing. But what's really cool, I think, about their parts is that it's based on a true story. And I've never been a part of a film that is completely based on a true story. So that was really powerful and made working on set that much more meaningful and important for me. And it was amazing, you know, to see it all come together and hear that it comes from a Wired article is just crazy. You know, it blows my mind.
So tell us about Spare Parts now. You said it came from a Wired article. It's a true story. Let's hear a little bit about it without spoiling so people can go to the film once when it comes out. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's kind of, I won't spoil it, but it's known in the Wired article. So just know that I haven't spoiled it.
Okay.
But okay. Basically, it's about four students, and all of them are from very different backgrounds, have very different interests, and all from, you know, low-income families, low-income high school, kind of on, you know, questionable paths. And so one of them has this idea when he sees a flyer to go to this insanely competitive robotics competition at UCSC, which is actually where I go to college, so it's funny. And he convinces his substitute teacher to allow him to do this. And he gathers together three other boys who, you know, the four of them would never typically be friends. And they end up going to this very, very competitive robotics competition at UCSC and competing against schools like Cornell, MIT. And let's just say, you know, the small team can sometimes, you know, the underdog can sometimes take it away. But, you know, I can't say.
Yeah, so tell us about what is your role involved in this?
Yeah, and so I play a student from Cornell to compete against them in the competition, and I am the love interest of one of the four main boys, specifically Christian, who's kind of the brain of the group. He's kind of, you know, the nerdy one into engineering and stuff. So, yeah.
And awesome. How is it to work with people like George Lopez, Marissa Tomei, and Jamie Lee Curtis? That's got to be amazing, really, for sure.
Oh, it was wonderful. You know, I've grown up hearing about these people, so it was really cool to actually work with them on set. I'll start with Jamie Lee Curtis just because at the table read, which was the first time we read the script for the entire cast, by some miracle, I guess, I just got sat next to her by chance. And, you know, she was somebody, she turns to me, introduces herself, is, you know, cracking jokes at the table, just making me feel so welcome. So that was really, really, really great. And then for Marissa Tomei, I didn't actually have any scenes with her specifically, but she would often film before or after my scenes. So I would just observe from the side and, you know, watch her tactics for getting into the character and turning herself on. And that was really just so amazing. And just being able to observe was honestly the best learning I could have gotten. And then George and I, we did have some scenes together, and he's just the nicest guy. You know, after I finished some of my scenes, he would pull me aside and, you know, just talk to me for 10 minutes, give me some great advice, and joke around, make me feel like I was able to feel comfortable on set, you know, with these bigger actors. And it was really, really nice. And, you know, throughout the entire journey of filming this, like he would always say hi to me every morning, you know, call me nicknames. Like, he was just so fun to work with, and he really made it enjoyable for everyone, I think.
Well, definitely, and being able to be on this set and have this opportunity, and especially talking about your campus and stuff like that, when the premiere comes out and the film comes out, which is this weekend, is that correct? Am I almost?
Yes, Friday. Yeah.
Friday it comes out, and we'll be airing this interview on Friday, so we'll be definitely promoting it out on social media and stuff. It's got to be. Awesome for you. And how you said that the students at the school have been really behind this and this opportunity. They can't wait to go see it, can they? To see you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've obviously, you know, talked to my friends about this and whatnot, but even people that I might not be close friends with are excited for me. And when I see them, you know, walking to class, they'll stop me and be like, hey, just wanted to say hi. I saw your music video, or I'm excited for your movie, or this or that. And my whole sorority, especially all my sorority, they've all been so helpful and so supportive about everything, and it's wonderful to have people around you that are encouraging you to do what you love, you know.
Okay. And so that's so really excited about Friday's premiere. Now, the question, it'll be out in theaters. The one other question we want to talk about is your music. And your music was a couple months ago. So tell us a little about your music.
Yeah. So I released in November my first single off my EP, which is a total of 4 tracks, and my music video, which actually was Kickstarter funded. So it was a really new journey for me. It was crazy and a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's interesting how now people can use Kickstarter and things like that to fund opportunities, and there you go, for sure. And then it seems like you're a promoter yourself, so once you have the money to release all this, it's now time to promote to get it out there. And you said you have both of your music and your acting are both loves, so you basically can't rate which one's different. Which one do you think you're going to have greater success in, music or
that's
film?
That's a tough question. Yeah. I've never gotten that. to be honest, I don't know, because to me they go hand in hand. You know, I'll have auditions where I have to do some scenes and then also sing, or vice versa. So I don't know. I really can't say. I hope I'm successful in both.
So do you plan on, so you're pretty much when going to school, how much do you plan on working, especially with the film, and now you're going to get out in the mainstream more with this part in this film and stuff like that? Now, what if work doubles for you or triples for you? How are you going to maintain balancing school and acting?
Well, you know, my family and I, we kind of have this theory, I guess, where it's, you know, stay in something as long as you can, and until it gets in the way or starts to make you unhappy, then you don't have to give it up. So for me, I'm going to stay in school as long as I possibly can. And, you know, if acting or my music really takes off and I have to leave for a period of time and then come back or whatnot, I'm just going to take it from there. And I'm very open to having that happen, just because, of course, my career is, you know, for me, it's always the number one, and I'm really, really passionate about it. And I would love for it to, you know, totally take off. But, you know, I will always have school, and if I need to come back, or you, like I said, take time off, I think that's probably what would happen.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I had the same story for me, and I'm not pushing you, especially you're an honors and AP student, and I'm the educator is talking about he took time off when he was having his run in pro wrestling down south in Arkansas. I was going to say I was going to just do it in the summer. I was working as a pro wrestler, minor leagues in the Pittsburgh area. Then I worked every day and got on TV, and I'm like, I'm not coming back. So I did finish my undergrad and then went to grad school and became a teacher. So it's very different how stories come, and then I get back into the entertainment field and radio and television. So you never know where your opportunities are going to lie. The question I want, the thing, and I'm sure that to bring up is, you know, you talk about how you want to produce, you want to do all these different things. You were an honor student, AP type student in high school. What's your major in college?
So right now I'm pre-com, communication and film and media studies.
Cool.
So it's a double major, yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, the entertainment industry, but kind of the other side.
And why did you choose this school compared to, let's say, UCLA or somewhere else with the film school and stuff like that? What was the reason?
So initially I was going to possibly go to NYU or University of Michigan, and those are both obviously remarkable schools, but I really realized that for me, going to those schools would be a great opportunity, but I would not be able to successfully do acting or music. And also, to be honest, I don't love the cold weather. I'm a California girl.
Well, it's 26 degrees in Pittsburgh today, so don't even get me started.
Exactly, yeah. And so, you know, I honestly had no plans of going to UCSB, and it was almost a school that I didn't even remember I had applied to. And I visited the campus, and, you know, I had heard so much, oh, it's a party school, it's this, it's that, and I was, you know, I came in with a little bit of a bias, I'm not going to lie. And when I got here, I really experienced the exact opposite. You know, people have this idea of what UCSB is and, you know, these rumors about what's happened here. And the students and the community and the entire attitude of the campus is just opposite of what I've heard. And, you know, it's really remarkable, because I think the school has a lot of negative, let's say, negative, you know, buzz around it at certain times, but I'm very lucky to be here, and I think it's, you know, the perfect distance away from LA, so I can still do my acting and music.
Exactly.
Exactly. It has programs for me that I love. It's by the beach, beautiful weather, and it's a really good balance of academics and social life, and that's what I wanted. You know, I wanted to go to college where I felt like I was part of a community. It was, you know, a campus life and, you know, a typical college lifestyle, and I just felt that at the other schools I wouldn't necessarily get that, as well as being able to pursue my acting and music. So this just felt like the right place, and you know, I love about riding my bike and being active, and that's totally what this school is. So
well, it's amazing to talk to an 8-year-old that's so mature in so many ways. I could see at 8 you telling your mom, "I want to be an actress," and she's like, "Sure, yeah. I knew you from." Were you a strong-willed child? Because that's were you as growing up a strong-willed child when you're like 4, 5,
yes.
6 years old?